pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. Nathan is still traveling. He's going to be in Denver very soon, which means that I need another guest host. So we're bringing back the recurring guest host, Scotty.
Hey,
Scott.
Scott's how's here. It going?
He was back here talking about Empire. He said a lot of wrong things. Everyone gave him shit for it. So now he's here to talk about Lizardmen and say wrong things about it. But you know what? Wrong things is what we do. Which means it's time for Jaded Gamer Corrections Fuck Off, a segment of our show that I like to say is one that I hate. Basically, in the first Codex Army Book review that we did for the Lizardmen, I was saying that like the previous book had slans with hover. And like that apparently isn't the rule.
No, it's not. They count as infantry, but not are quite as infantry.
But they don't count as being on foot.
Yes, on foot.
Which is weird because I've been playing with it like that forever against you multiple times. And not a single time has somebody just been like, dude, they don't have hover. And I'm just like, I don't know where that got into my head, right? So there was that. And there was the telepathic conflagrations.
Yes.
Where I thought you were able to do it with a skink. But unfortunately, the way that works is you actually have to have two models with that rule in order to do it. So two slans can trade spells.
Yes. I can't remember exactly.
Yes. I went back and checked it. It says it. Two models with those with that rule within 24 inches of each other can trade one spell per turn at random, which is pretty cool. But you know, if you're running a dual slan list, you can get away with it. But that's really all there is to it, right?
Exactly.
That's all it. We are drinking beer. We are drinking
some Granville Island.
Granville Island.
Yes. We're drinking the Kitsilano Maple Cream Ale.
Yeah, Kitsilano is a very, very Canadian thing to say. Very Canadian town.
This is the old homebrew that my dad grew up on. It's down on the VC Island, and
maple cream ale. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's not bad. I mean, it's better than the maple bacon.
Yeah, I
definitely like it better.
There's a little bit of Nathan in there, but a little bit not.
With a creamy finish. Oh my god, why is that image in my mind? Oh man, so. Yes. It has been an interesting week because there's been a lot of Lizardmen talk, a lot of back and forth here. Obviously, we're seeing some Space Marine models, which are interesting to say the least. And, you know, we had some fun drama on the Jaded Gamercast website with some comments from a man who he just said his name was like SFH or whatever, posted from work. Because I saw his IP address for the business that he worked for. So I was just like, all right, whatever. I don't give a shit about that. But one of the things I thought was very funny, and this was, we almost brought the stupidity check back for this one, because one of his complaints was that we are too negative. And I'm just like, dude, have you seen the title for this show? Like, have you listened to the episodes? Like, it is kind of on brand, right? Like, things being stupid. But again, like, I made a post and a comment, he thanked me for the post and the comment, and we have differing views, right? I think the guy's pretty level-headed when it comes to his view on fantasy, which is totally fine. I disagree. Hey, that's the way that shit goes.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, like, that's all part of the game. But, it was fun anyways.
Yeah.
I posted a GIF of 50 Cent when it was done, and I don't know, I flexed my muscles and called that a win, I guess. Because it's the internet, and nobody actually wins in arguments.
Well, you quickly discussed it with me overall, and I'm like, yeah, I can see a little bit of his point, I see a lot of your point, you know, and it's that's the way the game goes, right? It totally goes into that perspective of... It's whatever you perceive it as is, right? If it works for you, it works for you. If it doesn't work for somebody else, like...
Well, one of the things that he had said was he's just like, well, you can't really take into account poison and this and that because then you're doing XYZ and it's not a real... You know, you can't quantify that. And I'm just like, but that's the game I play. I play the XYZ game.
Exactly.
I like stacking those combos up and having that massive turn. It didn't happen in the game that you and I just played at any point because I pretty much fucked up every aspect of that game.
Yes.
But really, it was just a lot of getting to try the armies out. Now, again, we'll talk about that when we come back here. We'll talk about list building and tactics for Lizardmen.
For sure.
But before we get started into that, let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. Scott, what were you up to?
I busted out on Monday, busting out some Ceruleans, actually, for Firestorm Armada. I've been playing my Aquins now for, God, it'll be 5 or 6 years now since they first came out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Since
well before the Mark IIs.
Yes. Well, it was...
Medusa.
Oh, it was way... It was basically the starter set.
So it'd have to have been at least 4 years.
Yes. Yeah. It was basically the starter set, two boxes of starter set, and that was how it came out of the
box.
And it was a big battle between me and Terry to see who's going to get him first.
Who's going to get the Aquans done? Yes, Terry still hasn't even assembled hers. No, I assembled. I assembled all of Terry's models. They're all assembled. So no, she has yet to paint.
So them. I was like, nope, I want to do something different. I want hard, you know, big old broadsides, just like the old British battleships, and just go in there like galleon style and just hammer out guys. So I was like, yeah, I want to do this up. And I, you know, and they're really
well. Ceruleans are really good. They're really competitive.
Well, so. The Ceruleans really remind me of one of the old sci-fi TV shows where like the I can't remember what it was called now.
Sci-fi shows.
Like, it was like the ship splits open and the fighters launch and it closes itself and it's got shields. Blah blah. Is it an anime? No, it was not an anime.
The ship splits open and shoots the fighters.
Yes, it shoots the fighters out and it's got to reclose itself.
Vaguely remember this. Yes.
Yes. It was like it was right, some yeah. B-rated show. Right, I'm right there with but you. But it was phenomenal.
I mildly recall a show where the ship splits open and little models. It was just a little model ships.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was some B-rated stuff. But I was like, I totally need to do this fleet.
So I've been assembling lizard men like crazy, putting together a little bit of Firestorm Armada as well since I got those Directorate drones, which are awesome, by the way.
Yes.
You can take them in squads of 2 to 4. They have boarding assault torpedoes, which means that every hit that you get with those torpedoes counts as a boarding action of a point, right? Yeah. So like if I hit you 3 times and you only shoot down one, that's two dice I get on a boarding assault. Mm-hmm. So with 4 of them, it's pretty crazy. And it's strength 4 torpedoes for each ship at all 4 range bands. They're 25 points apiece. Yeah, I bought 2 blister packs. Cleaned them up, got them ready to go. But like I was also saying to you, I put together the Troglodon.
Mm-hmm.
I put together the Bastillodon. And I put together the Ripperdees.
Yes.
And Troglodon was a beautiful kit to put together. Everything went together perfectly. It was so easy. They're so genius about hiding the mold lines. Like, everything about it was just perfect.
And I saw it on the battlefield. It looks phenomenal. Like,
it looks really, really good. It's a slick model.
Yeah.
And then the Bastillodon was the same thing. Went together perfectly. Like, I'm not totally done assembling it, but, like, went together really, really well. Mm-hmm. I was very happy with it. And then I got to the Ripper Ds, and, God, that is a shitty kit. That kit is so bad. Nothing... There are no hidden lines. I mean, every line is just right out there on Front Street. Like, there's no hiding anything. And the kit goes together very strangely, where stuff doesn't really slot in. It just kind of, like, nudges together, and you have to glue it and try to hide that line as best as you can. Oh, you just don't really get the opportunity to do it. But again, after having put together the Saurus Old Blood character, which is Krokgar...
Yes.
That you get from the Carnosaur / Troglodon box.
Yes.
And I showed him to you today.
Yeah, he did.
Oh. Bar none, he is the best looking Saurus character ever released by Games Workshop.
Oh, yes.
Bar none. By far. The fine cast stuff looks like shit. Everything, like even the old metal models look like shit compared to this guy. And this is just like a plastic throwaway model that you get in the kit. But he is amazing. He's such a good model. He looks
very amazing. Especially since you said the second leg swap and you could glue the plates on where you want them.
Glue the plates on the legs. He's got a base. Everything comes with him, so you don't have to worry about like
pose.
You got to go cut some legs off of another Saurus just to get him on his feet, right?
No,
it was great. Great pose. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I was amazed with that actually.
GW. I look forward to painting them. Absolutely.
Yes.
I don't take Old Bloods all that often, but I may end up doing it just because I've got. I can honestly say that. Well, when we get into the tactics, I'll talk about this a little bit more. But there are certain aspects of the Slan and the powers and the cost of the Slan that I can kind of do without. So we'll see how that goes.
Right on. Yeah. The only thing I finished off in hobby as well is Sunday night, I actually completed putting together 370 zombies.
Yeah, you were
40K
saying
and fantasy. 300 zombies for fantasy.
Oh, my God.
70 for my plague typhus horde there, and that's I will never touch another zombie.
Yeah, well, I think I did 20 when I was working for Games Workshop, and I didn't want to touch another zombie ever again. And I play vampire counts, and I'm just like, not worth it.
And I'm done. No, there's it. I'm zombie down.
All right, so Scott and I did have a game before we recorded, so it's already quite late.
Yes.
But... you know, it was very interesting, and one of the big things is I really tried to shoehorn in it all the new stuff, right?
You
so
did.
I had Ripperdactyls in there, I had a Bastillodon in there, I had a Troglodon in there. And one of the big issues right now that we're seeing... Well, okay, I'm not going to jump into that. Let's actually go to the weekly listener poll for this week.
Okay.
Which was, do you feel that the Lizardmen were properly rebalanced in this new army book? We didn't have a ton of people voted for some reason. People thought that this was not worth their time.
I threw my hat in there.
But 81% said yes, and 18% said no, but we didn't get any comments. I would have been very interested to hear from people who feel like it wasn't a proper rebalance. Do you think that's just jaded Lizardmen players going like, this wasn't a proper rebound. The slam got nerfed. This is bullshit. You think that's what the no's are?
What do you mean I can't lay lore master for every lore, blah, 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 right? Like, it's not like, yeah, I can't cupped hands everything. And yeah,
right.
Exactly. I can definitely, like, I've seen Lizardmen played for a long, long time. Very much so that I've played against you a ton of times, right? With every army that I've pretty much, I can feel right at this point in time. And every time it's been like a really tough game, really hard game. And I think, yeah, it's a different play style. Same that happened with my Empire. It's you're rebuilding a new game style within the whole book.
Right.
And that's what this basically comes down to. So people are, you know, I think it's just going to be one of those learning curves that people adjust or they won't. And I think a lot of people just adjust because Lizardmen.
I think people will adjust just fine. I mean, I felt like it was really balanced. I didn't feel like there was any one particular thing that just got thrown out the door. You know, the Salamanders kind of getting a little bit worse, being 5 points more expensive. Ah, you know what? That's totally fine. They still are like the only thing in the game that's running around in a unit shooting flame templates, right?
Yes.
You know, they changed up the Razordons, but they're still not as good as the Salamanders. You know, all the Stegodons got cheaper. So I think it was a properly good rebalancing. The special characters all got way cheaper and they all got better. So I think that from that standpoint, you have a lot of options.
Yes.
Like I use Tetsuiko in this game. Oh. And he was great.
He was, yeah.
I mean, he was literally only there for his two abilities, but both abilities were awesome.
Yes. Like, the biggest thing is I see that they're not controlling the offensive magic phase as much, but defensively, they're, like, still on par.
Well, on defensively, they really did work really well just with the reroll.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the reroll saved me twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I had a Dispel Scroll in there on a Skink.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I had enough stuff going for me. It was just kind of again... Trying out all the new models and making a lot of mistakes
with them. Well, it was a
mix and match. Yeah, just trying to figure out what was going on, right? I don't think that I would use all of them. I think the Ripper Dactyls are gonna go in my list just because it's hard for me not to compare them to the Salamanders and go, okay, well, Salamanders can run up and shoot and do this many wounds. Yep. Ripper Dactyls can charge in and attack and do how many wounds, right? Like, it's just, I think the Salamanders are much more flexible. I mean, they're obviously way more points. Salamanders, I think, end up being, you know, 240 points or some shit like that. Like, they tend to be really expensive.
Yes.
But for the most part, even if I were to throw in the extra Ripper Dactyls to even that up, it just would not make it. All right,
no.
So,
well, the Ripper Dactyls have their place, right? That was the biggest thing, is that I didn't have anything for you to hunt with them.
Yes,
if you
had something that was hunt, unfortunately.
Yes, like, if you're playing anybody else that has War Machines left behind or has, like, stuff bombing
you had
around,
one unit where my armor piercing and killing blow meant anything, so I was like, well, I'll throw it on them.
Which,
I just decided to charge them turn one. I was just like, oh, well, he'll wipe me out.
Exactly.
I got to see what these guys can do.
Exactly.
All right, so that was our question for this week. We will have another question for you at the end of the show. Tune in for that. Thanks to everyone who voted, all 22 of you.
I was one of them.
And as apprehensive as I am to do it, let's talk about Space Marines.
Oh, God.
All right, so here we are. We are seeing a couple of models for Space Marines. We are seeing, you know, veterans. We're seeing some tanks. We're seeing some anti-air-ish type things.
Yes.
But the big thing is the Meganators.
The Cataphract Terminators, what they're supposed to be called. Or Castellan Terminators.
Castellan?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah,
somebody was saying like Centurions.
Yes.
But, you know, like, okay, here's the thing. I'm going to go ahead and say this right out front. I don't think they're that bad. I think that they're a little bit ill-conceived. It was an old design that was way back in the day that somebody had drawn on a piece of paper. And they said, hey, you know what? Let's do it. It's there. Let's do it. We've got the concept for it. I find them to be very strange. I think the proportions are awful. I hate where the arms are. Like, if you look where the guy's head is. Because, again, they use regular fucking Space Marine heads. That drives me nuts. Like, why wouldn't you just cover it and just make them more like a dreadnought? But instead, they have Space Marine heads. They're not even Terminator helmets, for fuck's sakes. They have Space Marine heads.
Yes.
And so you're just like, okay, so here's his head, here's his neck. It's like his shoulders right here. So what, his arm ends at the bicep of this thing?
Like, yeah, it's... It's basically
he's bending at the elbow,
or he basically
he's got to fight like this.
Exactly,
that's what he's got to do. Nobody can see what I'm doing right now. This is a fucking podcast. Yeah.
It's like, or his arms are tucked right up against his side inside that suit, and he's using like a little robot. Little
right, exactly. Well, it's like then we also know we also know that his crotch is up here at the belly button because it's a space marine. So it's like what his legs end right here. Like it's just it's such a silly thing.
Well, we also like I was talking with one of the guys from John's Kingsway there, and it was like, oh, so the cod piece is so large that they can't even move their legs.
Yeah. Like, it's like, oh yeah, I cannot grasp how they walk at this point, because they've got this massive cod piece and then they have massive hip armor.
Yes, exactly.
Extra hip armor, because you know those hips, that's where the Space Marines never want to get shot, is in their bad hips.
Yeah. I was like, oh,
but you know, the drill punch option, I think it's just, it looks so stupid.
Oh, it's a siege hammer from the
It's, you know, it looks like you're going to go deep core drilling. I mean, if an asteroid is coming toward Terra and they need a couple of deep core oil riggers, Marines, these are the guys that you hire. Oh. Armageddon reference. No, it's just, it absolutely falls off for me. I think they look stupid. I think if you remove those, they don't look half bad with just like power fists.
Exactly.
I got absolutely nothing against that, but
yeah, and they all have meltas attached to them on top of it, like
right. And it's hate them. That's the thing. I don't hate them. I don't think they're the worst. I'll wait. I will reserve judgment until I see the models. But they're so weirdly proportioned and they're so weird looking. I think it's really, really hard to get behind these. And there's so many people online who are just raging about these models. I hate them. I think they look stupid. And then there's like two guys who suddenly come out and they're just like, hey guys, they're not that bad. This is an old design. Fuck you. This is an old design. You guys need to respect it. I'm just like, nah, but it's weird. Like, no, you couldn't have come up with something better than this.
I am totally on the, this is the retardedness of mainstream. There was definitely like huge things. Like the whole thing about Terminator armor was it was tactical dreadnought armor. So there's nothing above that to dreadnought. So
right.
Now they've made this in-between thing. They're like, oh, hey, well,
it's uber tactical, dreadnuckle.
And you're like,
that's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it dreadnuckles. Dreadnuckles.
And you're like, where does this fit? Like, the Space Marines are supposed to be a strike force. So what, these guys like get shot out of the shot out of the cannon? I guess the Space Hulk can have to like drill in. So when like the boarding party comes, they got somewhere to like attach to or something. Like, it's just like, oh, I'm just looking at these. But they do have the same similar model, but with las cannons and assault cannons, etc.
Heavy bolters, so on and so forth. Yeah,
and they're like these are the mutilator version of, you know, Space Marines. There's also the, now that they have an obliterator version of them as well, which is going to be like heavy weapons.
Right.
They won't be twin linked, but they'll be two optional.
Well, I think that that's interesting just because at that point you kind of look at them and go, right, I'm basically taking a, what we can only assume is a 2++.
Yes.
Maybe it's a 2+.
Yeah, that's what you're going to do. Like the only thing, logical way they could put it is add additional wound to them.
Well,
because they're not going to have a 2+, 4+, I think if or 3+.
If you give them an extra save, what I could honestly see is that they would have, you know, an extra wound apiece, which is totally fine, but they'll have a 2+ save with a 3+ invulnerable.
I don't think they'll have 3+ invulnerable.
You don't think they're going to go that far?
I think what they'll do is they'll end up exactly like they did with the Grey Knights, Paladins, and they'll run them like that, with two wounds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the 2-5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would probably work out.
Yeah, like that's the only, you know, maybe a 4+. I can see the 4+ model.
As soon as we see how much they cost, I mean, this is a, as Nathan would say, this is a Crudace book. They're probably going to be amazing. And then before you know it, they're just going to absolutely stand out. And then that's it, right? So it's, I think it's really hard. My dad's going to microwave something right now. So if you're beeping in the background, that's what it is. My dad's visiting from Arizona.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, so like I said, I don't hate them, but I think they're very awkward. I think they're kind of stupid. We'll see how the rules go. This really goes back to what we talked about last week when the weekly listener poll was, do you favor aesthetics over rules? I think everyone who's sitting there talking about how terrible these models are, you know, that's going to be the test. This is a Robin Crudace book. They're probably going to be amazing.
Oh, God, the Crudace.
You know, so I think just get ready for the fact that these are probably going to be like twice the cost of a Space Marine for 3 or 4 times the damage, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Like I said, I don't hate them, but they're kind of silly. And they've got a dreadnuckle.
I'm not touching them because I'm running white scars and they totally don't fit.
Well, yeah. Although, if you mounted one of those on a bike, actually, his bike would be like a rhino. It'd just be like him sitting on top of a rhino with like reins. Straddling. Just reins to like each of the lights. A rein going in, you know, where like you can lift the little thing to look inside. They just go inside. He's holding the steering wheels.
Okay. That'd be the best. Come on, man. Yeah.
All right. So that is that.
Yes.
So let's come back. Let's talk about Lizardmen.
All
right, so what was your first impression of the book when you went through it the first time?
Love it. I really, really loved it. It gave Lizardmen, you're not getting the cookie-cutter list at all.
You can do
multiple
things. I think it's hard to pick a list now, and I think that's almost what like is keep getting me off guard, is I'm looking at this going like, but the list I always took, the obvious one, I can't take that anymore. No. It's like 3,200 points.
Well, you can and can't. Like, it's the thing. Like, you still run your old list.
Oh, yeah.
There's been modifications.
I think if I run my old list, I'm still pretty happy with it.
You're pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but there's so many different variants that you can add on to it now. You can run the like, I did the math on it. You can run the 9 monster list.
Yeah.
With, like, a bunch of skinks running around and just, like, that's your list. Or you can run, like, the huge blocks of warriors and just have this huge temple guard block with a bunch of, like, swords blocking the court. And then, you know, whatever else you want to add into it. So there's like a huge flavor back and forth. I love that. I love the new models. Like, it was a good idea. The Ripidactyls and the Pterodons have made it way better now they're making their Monstrous Cavalry.
I think that they definitely, being Monstrous Cavalry, works in their favor. I think the Pterodons are a great choice if you're just looking for an artillery hunter. But I think the Ripidactyls, unless you know you're going to be playing against an army with knights, because that's where they're going to shine. All those extra attacks, rerolling to hit in close combat, they've got Frenzy, Killing Blow, Armor Piercing, you know, plus the their Frenzy gets +1, +D3 if you put the Toad on them.
Yeah.
So, like, if you know you're going to be playing against units with knights, they're perfect. They're one of the best knight hunters you can throw out there. Problem is every other unit you put them against, they have to be a support unit. And that's when they kind of fall off. Because, I mean, if you're just looking at tank hunting, swarms and skinks work just fine for that.
Yeah, but I could totally, like, I'm really worried about them running into, you know, stuff like my steam tank, stuff like my Derpogriffs. Like,
Derpogriffs, yeah.
Like, yeah, like,
that's, they are, yeah, that like, could really do some damage there.
You know, there's certain units.
Not Killing Blow quite so much, but the, you know, the Strength 4, Toughness 3, with all those extra attacks, rerolling, so on and so forth,
plus you can get on the flank and I only have one guy attacking to the side when you're getting 3 or 4, right?
You gotta be really kind of smart with them. But again, like I said, 3 for 120 points is a bit rough. It's a little bit hard to try to balance that.
Yeah, like, they can be magic missile quite easily. Like, that was one of the things I was weighing in our game. I was like, well, just throw a fireball at them and, you know.
That would have been the end of it. Yeah. Like,
so it's kind of, you know, you're putting...
I think at 2 wounds a piece, that's when I start feeling like they're not quite where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think for 40 points a model, but you know what? No, I can't complain about their price. Their price is actually pretty good.
Yes.
It's just, but they are light. They are. Yes. You have to be very careful about how you deploy them, where you put them, and when you decide to bring them into the fight, you know, they kind of have to stay off in the wings, right? Because they've got, because they fly.
Yeah.
And there's that. Okay, so you're very happy with the book. How do you feel about the? You were talking about like the different list types, the monsters and stuff like that. How do you feel about the special characters?
Oh, I think some of them are really, really awesome. There's one or two that I'm kind of iffy about. You're like, maybe if you're playing...
They're middle of the road.
They're middle of the road. Like
Czech hacks.
Yes, there's a couple ones that are just like...
To say all their names with like this weird Klingon accent just because that's the way you have to do that kind of thing.
Oh, no. Like, there was some that are just like, I'll never touch this unless it's a Grand Army.
Right.
You know, and I need to fill up points or try this out.
Mazda Mundi.
Yeah. No, actually, no, Mazda
780?
You can only feel him in the Grand Army. Like, that's the only shit.
That's
like,
why I said Mazda Mundi.
But actually, for him as a character, like, I think he's phenomenal as a character.
I think he's actually a great character. Because, again, you are paying 780, but he is an ancient Stegodon. And that's kind of the big selling point for him, is that you mount him on an ancient Stegodon. He goes and bombs around the table, no big deal.
Well, the other thing is he's lore master for whatever lore he wants.
Lore master for whatever lore, which is awesome. And then he's got a couple other bonuses, which are also pretty damn awesome. I think the big failure for special characters is Krukgar, because he no longer is allowed to take a unit of Cold One Knights as core. And he's also... Like, now he just has Shem's Burning Gaze for his bound spell, which is okay, but unless you're fighting undead demons or Skaven, it's kind of a shitty magic missile.
It's bound and he can't boost it to power 6, so they can't get that strength 6 out of it.
Yeah, exactly, right? So now you're stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, his spear only just does double wounds. One wound counts as two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His monster is slightly better in the sense that it has an extra attack and doesn't have to deal quite so much with the frenzy, and it has swift stride, but it's like, you know, you're paying through the nose for a guy with, like, shit that is not nearly as good as just what's in the rule book. Like, if you're going to go hard on the predatory fighter and you're going to go hard on a bunch of other stuff, like, there's much better things in the Warhammer rulebook to just put on an old blood. And you're going to save yourself, like, 100 points.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't see any reason to take Krogar. All right. So, here we go. Let's talk about the list building aspect here. All right. So, when we played, what I ended up taking was 40 Saurus Warriors, 2 units of 10 Skinks. I ended up taking a unit of 16 Temple Guard with my Slan. My Slan was my BSB with the Skaven Pelt banner. I was using Loremaster High Magic. I had Soul of Stone to adjust my miscast, which saved me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had a Dimensional Cascade that I moved to just the Small Blast template, which was amazing. And I also had a Harmonic Convergence, which was awesome with the Channeling Staff. I mean, that thing was... How many... I think at the end of the game, I had got... Probably got an extra 7 magic dice total.
Oh, at least.
At least.
Yeah.
Because it was like... What was I saying? I was like, okay, so my 2 regular channels and then my Slannels. And I'm just like, I'm going to coin the name Slannels. Slanneling dice. Yeah. Because, yeah, it was 3 dice a turn with 5 plus to channel. So that was getting me big time dispel dice, big time power dice. And every turn it was working out. Yep. And I think it was only one turn I flopped it.
Yes.
But in other turns, it was like I was getting 2 and 3 easy. So, like, that was really great. And I had Tetu Iku, whose bonus Vanguard was awesome.
Yeah.
And his bonus to the magic phase really, really paid off. That saved me in at least 4 separate spells.
Yes.
And again, if my Slan had died, I still had a caster in backup, right? I didn't end up casting anything with him because I never failed to cast with my Slan. And I was going high magic. Because high magic was just winning the game, man.
Oh, for sure.
It was really, really making moves. I cast 2 spells in the first turn, threw them out. I ended up getting the Withering from Lore of Shadow, and I ended up getting Glittering Robes from Lore of Metal. And Glittering Robes is the only thing that kept me in that game. Because I think we had... What do we have? We had a unit of 16 Temple Guard, 2 Spawns, and a Demon Prince. And after an entire round of combat, we'd each done a wound.
Yes, it was.
Because it was like, well, he can't wound me, I can't wound him. Hey, okay, we're okay with this.
Well, no, because I had you down also because I had Curse of Leper on you.
Yeah, Curse of Leper. So you had down
the
toughest
one and the Miasma Pestilence. So your weapon skill 1, initiative 1.
Yep.
And, only one guy died.
Then I used Drain Magic to get rid of Miasma Pestilence.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, like, High Magic worked out very, very well for me. I also had 3 Ripperdactyls. I had a Bastillodon with the Ark of Sotek. Mm-hmm. I had a Troglodon.
Yep.
3 Salamanders.
Yes.
And 2 Jungle Swarms.
Yep.
That was the list.
Only 2, yeah.
I also had a Skink Priest with a Dispel Scroll.
Yes, yeah.
And he had Lore of Beast with Wisdom's Well for him, but he never cast it.
Yeah, he never did. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, that was basically how that worked out. And, I mean, it was a really shaky list. And the only reason why it was shaky is because I was shoehorning in all of the shits.
Yeah.
And it was, I didn't have any Stegodons. You know, I always loved the Ancient Stegodon. Just the way that the cost of it has dropped. It's fantastic. I had to completely drop my Knights.
Yep, you did.
Because I was just taking too many things that cost too many points. So there was no room for, like, a 400-point unit of Knights. It just absolutely was not able to get in there. I really could have done with a unit of Knights in this game. They would have been a lot more helpful than some of the shit I was putting out there.
Yeah.
Well, just with the Predatory Fire and being a point cheaper is nice.
Yes.
Also, their command costs, I think, a couple points cheaper as well. So you do end up saving a little bit on them for how much better they are. But yeah, I mean, Predatory Fighter, that's the other thing in the game that we had.
Yeah.
Predatory Fighter was not game-breaking.
No.
But it was great.
It was very
balancing. It was bonus.
Yeah, it was...
I mean... I think every single time I attacked, I got anywhere between 1, if I kind of flopped it a little bit, to like 6 additional attacks. And like those worked really good. And I didn't even get a chance to use my Troglodon Shout.
No.
I never even got my Jungle Swarms into base contact with a unit so that my other unit would get poisoned. But like I had a unit of Source and they were just ripping through trolls. And I mean, like, it actually works out quite well as a bonus. I think it just works in the Saurus's favor in so many places, especially with the Temple Guard, because it was working very well for the Temple Guard as well. It was what ended up killing those last two spawns. Now, that being said, I also lost this game in dramatic fashion.
Yes.
I was just throwing stuff out there to see what it could do, right? And that was really what it came down to for that first game after getting the army book. But if I were to go back, it would be a lot different. Like, I wouldn't have the Ripperdactyls in there. I would not have the... Well, I mean, 50-50. I probably would not take the additional Skink Priest for the Dispel Scroll.
No.
I just don't... I don't really feel like I need it.
Not with a reroll. Like, your reroll is phenomenal. That point, you're like...
The reroll was really, really good. Plus the channeling. So channeling the Dispel Dice, you know, like, all that stuff. Like, it really, really did with Harmonic Convergence. I think, like, I didn't really feel like I needed it. And I ended up using it in the first turn just because I was just like, well, here's an opportunity to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Used it in that turn. Nothing happened in that magic phase. And then for every single turn after that, I was sitting there going like, wow, that was a 90-point slant I wasted, or skink I wasted points on.
Pretty much.
But, I mean, it wasn't the worst thing in the world. I just think you start getting really tight on points when it comes to the lizard men. And when you're talking about stuff like a 200-point Troglodon, 150-point Basilidon, you know, you're talking about 370 points for the knights, you're talking about another 240 points for the salamanders, like... Things add up really, really fast.
It does. And then, like, the thing is also with that is you only have the one spell. He's level one. He's not going to cast anything. Like, really.
Well, no, when I have a slant on the table, I'm not going to piss with it.
Well, you had the slant on the table, and you also had
Tatuiku.
So, really, the other guy is just
I don't think
there.
That he was like, needed. I think if I really wanted to cut points, I would lose Tatuiku, keep the skink with the Dispel Scroll, and just go from there. But Tetuiku's bonus in the magic phase, that shit was doing great. Exactly. And that Vanguard move was amazing. And just having a really solid backup caster with Lore Master works really well in your favor.
Oh, for sure.
So, I mean, I definitely like having it. So that was the list that I played. Like I said, I would really change it up quite a bit. I would probably look at adding more Temple Guard, more Saurus. I would look at keeping my knights in there and probably stick to, like, two monsters. Likely what would end up happening is it would be a Troglodon and a... I don't know. I still kind of go in the way of the Ancient Stegodon. Like, I still really like the Ancient Stegodon as an option. But, like, if I'm going to take Swarms, I want to take a Bastilodon. So I'll probably end up shoehorning him in there as well. Yeah. So that's when I start getting a little bit sketchy on, like, okay, I got to lose Tetuiku, I got to lose this, I got to lose that, just because I need to keep the points to get that stuff in.
Well, Tetuiku is still fine. That one, the extra priest, it was waste. So that's 100 points right there.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So that right there was that. He was waste.
Yeah, he was 90
and
points.
If you wanted Wissen's Wild Form, you could have cast a spell with high magic and
just
it out.
Pulled it out.
There you go. Like, it was kind of just bleh.
Well, it wasn't that it was like shit or anything like that. It was just, you know, turn one, I use the scroll and I'm done.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden he just runs around the table doing nothing, right? He's another skink without a blowpipe, unfortunately. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a weird place to have that model in there.
Yeah.
All right. So, Scott, if you were to build a list, what would your focus be?
Totally monsters. I would be monster crazy. I think running them... and then I would just run skinks with a couple Croxes in them.
For your core?
For a core.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then run, just like, because we looked at the list, like you could turn two Bastodons, two Ancient Stegs, three regular Stegs, both a hero and a lord on a Carnosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just stack. And I've faced four or five monsters in a High Elf book before, like two dragons, two phoenixes, and a griffin. And that was tough enough. Like,
yeah.
If you did this with the, and then, you know, they're having a 2-up, a 3-up save on top of that because of the scaly skin, etc.
Yeah.
And you can stack it with whatever else. Oh, like, I just don't even want to.
Yeah.
Other armies are, and that's so much terror. So much terror coming at you.
It is a lot of terror. I mean, you know, the frenzy from the Skaven Pelt banner never really played in for me.
No.
So for you, would it really just be skinks with Croxagores as your core, or would you be using Saurus, like a big block of Saurus?
I wouldn't bother with Saurus at that point, because I'm running, you know, I'm charging with two or three large monsters into one block at one time. So either they're going to hammer in there and crack it, or they're going to get stuck in there. But with cold-blooded, right, they're almost stubborn at that point. So they just sit there and grind it out until you get something else in the flank or rear.
Almost stubborn?
Well, because you're going in there, right, you're going to cause a ton of wounds. Even though you're going to be, even if you do have a failing, you're only failing by one or two, and then you're rolling cold-blooded. So you're only...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, sure.
So you're not getting stubborn, but you're not
running away. Not like stubborn,
Right? You're running away.
People tend to take that shit literally when you say it on this podcast. Just be aware of that, okay?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
No, it is not stubborn. It is not like stubborn. No. It's just, you know, you've got a decent chance of making it an even match.
On three dice, right? you're rolling a seven or less. So, yeah, it, you know.
So, you can make it. Yeah, so basically what you're saying is you would favor the Bastillodons over the, or the Ancient Stegs over the Troglodons, because obviously you're not going to have Saurus, so there's really no reason to take the Troglodons.
No, because I would take the Troglodon. That's the crazy one that has the roar with the predatory fighter.
Yeah, but you don't have anything else in your army with... Oh, well, no, Croxagores have predatory fighter.
Yes, but I don't... So but it gives predatory fighter to stuff that doesn't have predatory fighter.
No, it doesn't.
Does it not?
I don't think so. Yes, it does. Jesus Christ. Because
it gives predatory fighter to units that don't have it.
Let's take a look at this. Okay, that's what I was so,
all about.
Once per battle, at the start of any friendly combat phase, a Troglodon can unleash its primeval roar.
Yes.
This affects the Troglodon and all friendly units within range 12.
Yes.
All models in these units have the predatory fighter special rule. All models in these units that have the predatory fighter special rule gain an additional attack on any successful roll of a 5 or 6. So it's only going to work on Saurus, Troglodons, Croxagores, Cold One Riders, and Temple Guard, and Saurus characters.
You know what? I might just take it just as a monster.
Well, again, it's still...
And you have the channel dice.
I ran up and spat that cum in your face, in your Doom Prince's face halfway through the game. Almost did a bunch of wounds on him because it was just like, roll a 6 to hit, roll a 6 to wound. Oh. I'm like, come on, fail that save. Yeah. Nope, he got your save. So he didn't end up taking any wounds. But it doesn't give them predatory fighter. It just adjusts people who already have predatory fighter. That's why I kept it so close to my Saurus and my Slan.
That makes sense then. I thought it actually gave it, so then I was like, you remember the Stegs or anything else that doesn't have it? Then giving that boost would be huge.
No, but I mean, your Croxagores would get it.
Yep.
Right? So the Croxagores in the Skink Cohorts unit would get it. Your characters on Carnosaurs would get it.
Yes.
You know, your Troglodons would get it.
I would almost just take it just for that, the having another monster, so it's another target on the battlefield, and adding the channeling ability. Yeah.
Well, see, even I'm kind of looking at the possibility of taking two Troglodons in a unit that's really Saurus, Temple Guard, and Knight heavy. Almost for the fact that you get to do it twice per battle then at that point. You know, you get to use that roar twice.
Okay.
And that would actually be a pretty good way to do it. I mean, according to the rule as I just read it, I don't believe that there was anything in there that said, like, once per battle, regardless of how many Troglodons you got sitting on the table.
No, I think it's just one...
It's just that Troglodon gets to do it once per battle.
So, if you stacked them, it would actually be...
You know, so taking two of them there in rare wouldn't actually be a terrible choice. You'd actually... And again, like, they were great. Movement 7, I think, was huge because they were super, super mobile. And they still have 5 wounds. They're still pretty decent in combat. They were a bit meh. I mean, again, that's one of the big things about these monsters that are being added to the list that are not Stegodons, right?
True.
It's toughness 5... You know, 4 wounds or 5 wounds. Like, the Bastillodon is toughness 5, 4 wounds, strength 4, with the exception of that one strength 10 attack, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, you can absolutely understand, you know, kind of leaning more back toward the direction of the Stegodon, the ancient Stegodon, just for the fact that they've gotten so much cheaper now. It's only 15 more points to take a Stegodon.
Well, in fact, you can run 5 of them.
Which has a great...
For cheap.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, it's pretty amazing to get that shit in there.
Like, 2 ancients and 3 regular Stegs for under 1,500 points. And you're just like, yep, done.
No, I think Salamanders absolutely are still a must. I think it's hard not to be able to really rationalize Salamanders in the list. I mean, I made the huge mistake where I, like, charged my Ripper Dactyls into your Chaos Warriors, but, like, the Chaos Warriors were what I wanted to shoot with with those guys, and then I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm shooting the fucking Trolls.
Well, no, the Trolls are a better option, just due to the fact because they lose their regen, so they're just dying.
Well, just to the phase, right? Yeah, but what did I end up doing? I think I ended up killing one Troll, because I had one Flame Template miss.
Yeah, one missed.
One hit, two,
and then
the other one, like, landed dead center. So it was a bit of a...
And strength 4 on top.
Muddled shot, right? But... No, I mean, they definitely are good. I still think they're great. I still think they're worth taking. I think were you not playing against a troll-heavy Throg Chaos list,
yes,
you know, they definitely would work a lot better. You still have to be very careful about how you're placing them.
Yeah.
Which kind of brings me to the Jungle Swarms and the Bastillodon with the Ark of Sotak. You have to be very, very careful with the Bastillodon. It is not a fighter. Just get used to that.
Yes.
Right, like, it's a monster, sure, and it can stomp and it can thunder stomp, but it's only strength 4. It's nothing amazing, and really, what you want to be doing is just trying your damnedest to pump out more jungle swarms. Because jungle swarms, unlike a lot of other swarms, they actually fight pretty well.
They do.
You know, with the poison and stuff like that, like they fight pretty well.
And I was actually surprised. I thought we were going to take more of those in your list, actually.
Well, and again, it was more about didn't have the points because I'm trying to shoehorn everything in. I think what will end up happening is I'll probably end up making four bases. I'll take a Pastilodon with the Ark of Sotek. You know, I'll put them right dead center in the middle of the table and just wait for the right opportunity to get into a prolonged fight.
Yes. Or even you have the one unit on there, you can they generate ones from the Sotek, right?
Yeah, from the Ark of Sotek on a 4+, you get
so
a new base.
So if you take, what's the Tatooiku?
Yep.
Right? And you Vanguard them ahead of, right? You can Vanguard them into things as well beforehand. So you can Vanguard them into a building or wherever else you need to hide them.
Yeah, and just pump them up.
Pump them up later on or, you know, get them into those flanking positions or scatter off.
Yeah, you could absolutely do that. You know, and I mean, one of the other nice things is if you were looking at taking two Bastilladons, two Arcs, you can sit there and just keep pumping into that one unit of Jungle Swarms. Problem is Jungle Swarms are currently shitty-ass models.
Yes.
Like I said, you can make about four out of the Bastilladon box, which is pretty good. But I mean, if you're starting with a little unit or two and you're trying to amp them up, you know, you can do that. I think that's fine. You know, bringing them into the fight kind of late game. But you have to be very careful about your Bastilladon. It really is more of the odd support unit type guy. If you end up getting stuck in against anything that can fight, he's going to go down.
Yeah, like I got my Gore Chariot into it, and he didn't have a chance.
That was the end of the day, right?
But at the same time, like if you can get into a softer unit, the you know, 2+ save with a toughness 6 was, I was like, wow, that's...
Well, I made a lot of saves, and it took him a while to go... Well, actually...
It was 3 turns.
It was toughness 5.
Toughness 5?
Okay. Yeah, toughness 5, because you were winning me on force.
That's right.
Yeah, so... But
that 2+ save was actually, you know, decent.
Well, for 150 points, he was really solid, right?
Yeah.
Like, I still like the Gore Chariot. I think the Gore Chariot's still a better choice, which is why, I'm still kind of waffling on the Bastilladon.
Yeah.
I think he's good. I think you can take him. For 150 points, he's not the end of the world. But when you're playing a list like this and there's so many other really good options, I think it's hard to get behind him unless you're just trying to amp up. And I know it sounds stupid, but like save some points on Jungle Swarms.
Yeah.
You're almost better off just leaving the Bastilladon at home and just taking 5 more Jungle Swarms.
True, yeah.
I can see that. Sticking with that big unit of Jungle Swarms or multiple unit of Jungle Swarms instead. But yeah, that's kind of where I stand on that. All right, so... Let's talk about the magic. Let's talk about magic items. You know, one of the things I talked about last week, which caught me some heat, was that, you know, the magic items are pretty lame. There's really nothing there. The Skaven Pelt Banner is nice because it gives them frenzy. But really, it's like, that's about it. I mean, what are you going to do, Sword of the Hornet, and get like a extra D3 wounds every time you... Like, you're going to pay 30 points for that shit?
No.
By a Sword of Striking.
Exactly. Yeah, there it is.
I mean, one of the things, you know, like I said...
Or, yeah, Sword of Battle for 25 and get the extra attack.
Yeah, you can do Sword of Battle as well.
Right? And with Predatory Fighter on top of that, so he's getting extra attack plus a reroll, you know.
You know, so...
A lot better combos.
It's definitely... Yeah, exactly. There's better options out there, but I don't... I need to play with the list a little bit more. I think I've just been playing Lizardmen for too long, and this was a bit of a change of pace for me. I do like the slan. I like the changes. I think that the disciplines of the old ones are all pretty sharp, except for the last one, where they make you ethereal and unstable, where it's just like, okay, so I'm slow as fuck, I'm ethereal, but if anybody so much as touches me, I auto-die.
But I'd run that with my monster list. I would totally do that, because I can't hide them anywhere else. I'm not taking Temple Guard, so I just have them bomb it around.
Well, you know what you should take? Right? You should just take Tatooiku in your monster list. And that way he's only 185 points. You can put him in with a unit of the Skink Cohorts.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's true.
Because then he gets his bonus in the magic phase. He's got Lore Master Heavens. You sit there in Common and cast Endora all day long, and you get the Vanguard moves.
Yeah, that is. That's true. I was really also looking at Lord Croak, too. Like he's
Lord Croak is a very impressive special character. I really like just the whole, like, oh, yeah, and that unit's just, it's just unbreakable. Just deal with it. You know, I mean, when you're leadership 10 cold-blooded with a reroll and stubborn, your slan with your temple guard is pretty much unbreakable to begin with. What is it? 1 in 300 is the percentage to fail that?
Yes.
Cold-blooded leadership 10 with a reroll. But really, I mean, it's like, I don't know. I still think he's pretty expensive. I do love his spell. And having one, you have to admit, there's a bit of an attraction having one spell per turn that you can cast multiple times. Just ease your way through the magic phase, no problem.
Especially on a 10+, he's level 4.
Yeah, like, well, and I like, love the model, honestly. I wanted to get him and play him as like a Lore of Death slan, and just run like a dual slan list with Lore of Death. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to get too much into the special characters. Okay, so what do you feel is the real units to stray away from if you're trying to play competitive?
Ooh, if you're trying to play competitive, Razodons, I don't really see a whole use for them.
Well, yeah, there's no tactic with Razodons. It's just you kind of throw them out front. You try to get the reroll on your shots. Like I said, it's slightly better, but there's really no opportunity to really make that a game changer. It's just kind of like an okay stand and shoot. For the extra points that you're paying for Salamanders, Salamanders are just way better.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Salamanders just do it better for almost the same amount of points cost.
For me, one of the big things to stray away from is regular Stegodons. And upgrades for regular Stegodons. I think that a lot of those upgrades, they're really shaky. You know, getting the Devastating Charge for the extra attack or getting the D3 wounds on your impact hits, it's a lot of points for just not a lot of show. I think when you look at a young Stegodon for 215 points, it's hard to compare him to a Troglodon and go, you know what, I should be taking this guy. I get that they're two totally separate choices. But even at that point, for 150 points instead, you're talking about a best Stilodon, you know, amping up your jungle swarms. So I think I said this last show, for fuck's sake, there's only three core choices and there's three pages of special choices. So I think he just, the regular Stegodon just doesn't make the cut. What do you think?
No, I like the regular Steg.
I'm not saying it's a terrible unit. If you're going to go Monster Mash, obviously that's the option, yes. Right?
But yeah, you're for the special choices, there's a tough, right? Because there's so many special choices in here. So you're going to fill it up so quickly. Without even knowing it, because you're just like, oh, I want this and this and this and this and this, and you're like, oh crap, I'm out. But yeah, like I see where the Stegs fit. You need, like, the biggest problem with the regular Steg is it can't hold its own. So you need to run them either like pairs or you need to run it with something else. So that's the only downfall. And only the 4+ scaly skin, you know, it's going to get still toughness 6 with 6 wounds. But it's still only 4.
You're going to be taking wounds. That's taking the thing, wounds, right? Like I would take the toughness 5 with a 2+ scaly skin.
Yes.
Every day.
Exactly. Right? So it's
like, I get it's less attacks. I get it's no impact hits, right? Like I totally get everything about the Bastillodon. But again, it's, you know, quite a bit cheaper, 65 points cheaper. That we're talking about, that pays for the two jungle swarms you're talking about picking up then on top of it, right? Yes. So, you know, I mean, really, I think that's where I have to lean. I have to lean toward the jungle swarms and the Bastillodon, because the Bastillodon is still a monster. It's still got a stomp, thunder stomp. It's got that strength 10 attack.
Yes.
You know, it's got all... It's still a monster. It still causes terror. It's still stubborn. Come on, man.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, there's...
I think it's... So you're always going to lean toward the Bastillodon there. And I think that's why my regular old young Stegodon, he's just never going to make it back into my list. Because I think that he's the obvious trade for Jungle Swarms and the Bastillodon. And I think that, you know, in terms of looking at the list that I've been playing... And trying to, like, come up with, okay, how am I going to switch things up? How am I going to take points? And, you know, how's this going to change here, there, and the other place?
Yes.
That's the big thing right there.
Yeah, it basically comes down to, like, it's totally a support choice, and it depends on what it has to support. And the Steggy, some stuff it's not going to be able to support better. Like, I think it would work well with Skinks and Croxes.
Yeah.
Yes, but if you're going to have it support, you know, something that, like... like Temple Guard or Source Warriors, you're just giving away wounds.
Yeah, well, and that's always going to be a big issue with any swarm, right?
Yeah.
Or not the swarms, but just the
Stegodon. Like, yeah. You're going to go in there and you're giving up wounds that are free combat res.
Yeah, well, yes, that is true. I mean, usually with the Stegodon at strength 5, you know, you're getting the stomp, you're getting 4 attacks, you're getting all the Skinks attacks, you're getting the impact hits. So, I mean, if you can end up doing it, they do always kind of tend to hold their own, but that is for one round of combat.
Yes.
And then after that, they're just always kind of underperforming for the cost that you're paying. Yes. I mean, shit, the 16 Temple Guard that I put on the table was an enormous amount of attacks. They were super, super durable. They were stubborn, immune to psychology when I had the slant in with them.
Yeah.
And the 16 of them was only like 260-some points. So it's just like,
exactly,
man, like, why am I not taking more Temple Guard, right?
Yeah,
Temple Guard are the choice. Money winner at this point. And really, Temple Guard perform now.
Yes.
You know, I've said it before, kind of the core, the Saurus, the Temple Guard, they've always been a little bit lackluster. But with the Predatory Fighter, with the very slight modifications, and just the, you know, super slight point savings in a couple of them just for the command upgrades.
Yeah.
You know, you feel pretty good about them. And they tend to work out for you. So if you can get those combos working for you,
yes,
then hey, it's great.
And that's the thing. Like, with this army list, there is huge combos. Like, there is a stack of combos that people haven't even come up with yet. I've been trying to here and there and testing and back and forth. And,
yeah,
you know, there are some really good things you can bust out with them. And it's just like, wow, you can...
I'm really going to be interested to see how people play, like, the double Troglodon or the double Bastillodon type lists. Because I think that they're so strong and they add so much to the list, it's hard not to kind of lean in that direction. Like, even I'm now starting to look at it, pondering, going like, you know, I do kind of need another Troglodon. Like, I'm kind of 50-50 on, you know, the extra channel attempts are awesome for 10 points.
Oh, yes.
You know, like, I think that that's kind of a given if you have the points to spend. I think if you're planning on taking two, absolutely do it. You know, regular channel and then slantle that shit for the rest of it, right? I mean... those dice really do come back for you, and they work really, really well.
Oh,
so,
yeah, you can swing a magic phase
here. Exactly, and it did for me in a couple of situations here. Skink Skirmishers. You know, I still love them, and I have them, and that's the only reason why I use them. But they kind of more and more, as armies are being updated, they really underperform. It's been a long time since my Skink Skirmishers have really done anything for me. I am leaning back more toward now looking at the Skink cohorts and trying to fit more of them into my list. That, or I'm just going to avoid them completely. Like, if I do Skink cohorts, it'll be with Croxagores, right? Because that's a great unit.
Yeah.
It works really, really well for core.
Oh, for
and
sure.
I do like it. So I'm kind of sitting here looking at it going like, fuck, why am I wasting my time, you know, dropping 160 points into... these skirmishers when I can be taken a much, much better unit to fill out my core and support my Saurus unit, support every other fighting unit I have on the table. And I mean, I've seen them perform in games. So it's like, especially, you know, they cleaned up the rules for them where they're just like, no, all attacks, everything goes off of the Croxagore profile. You just act like the skinks aren't there till the Croxagores are dead.
Yeah.
That's just the way that it works. So like, I really like that. I think that that's great. And they have Predatory Fighter. And I love the idea of just having more Predatory Fighter in there, considering that they are Strength 7.
Yeah, that's...
3 attacks apiece, Strength 7, with a great, you know, with their great weapons in there.
And a 4-up scaly skin, so they're survivable.
Yeah. And
that's
really how I feel about it right now. I just don't... I just wish that they had, like, a proper Skink cohort box.
Exactly.
Because right now, all you have is the stupid fucking Skink Skirmishers box, and you can barely make... You can barely make a cohorts box out of that, and they don't rank up, and it's just, it drives me nuts.
Yes, there's a huge issue with that. Like, and that leads into, like, the worst unit, I think, so far, is the Chameleon Skinks.
Oh, they're
like,
dumb.
Because it's like, you're getting Skinks Skirmishers, and you're like, you're going to pay an extra 6 points, or more than that. They're up for the 13 points.
Yeah, they're 13 points, so they're almost double the cost of a normal skink.
With no extra abilities except -1 to hit.
Well, they get a 1 extra ballistic skill, and they get the bonus to cover.
So you're -1 to hit them more, so a flame template doesn't do anything.
No, it's ridiculous, because it's like, okay, but why wouldn't I just take more shots? I don't understand.
Yes.
And again, it's also, they're not core. They're taking up special.
You're like,
it's just completely insane to keep trying to fit those guys in there.
Yes, and they're up to a 5+, because before I think they were a 3+ unit.
Yes.
You can take
a unit of 3.
3?
Yeah.
Yeah, and now they're up to 5. So now you have to actually take 5 of them.
Yeah.
So you're just like, oh, okay, well, now I'm taking
6, you know, because there's 3 in a blister pack.
Yeah,
oh my god.
Yeah, not at all.
All right. So, give me your final thoughts on the book. How do you feel it stacks up to previous releases?
I think it's not a top tier army, but it's definitely on the edge.
Okay, what do you feel is top tier at this point?
Top tier is still VCs.
Vampire counts, sure.
Ogres. Ogres and vampire counts are definitely on the top edge of any army.
Sure.
But lizards are definitely up there, like them and Chaos and Empire, and I don't know if it's Dark Elves or High Elves. Probably Dark Elves are all right in that tight little knit group.
Well,
right
I'm
now.
Just talking about like the new. Let's talk about the new 8th edition.
So it'd be Empire, Chaos, and Lizardmen. I think are the army books that are right in there all together because there's so many options that you can put right into an army list. People will not know what you're going to bring because there's so many options available to you.
Yeah.
And you can play them whatever style you like.
Yeah.
And it works. And that's the big thing. It still works. Like, it's not like you're like, oh, I'm the underdog in this fight, blah, blah, blah. And it was right. Like, no. It, like, you know, if you bring your A game, they're going to work well for you.
Yeah. I don't feel like they're really overshadowing anyone. I think that's what's kind of maybe got some people on edge when it comes to Lizard, like hardcore Lizardmen players, is they're so used to being on, you know, top of the pile.
Yes.
That it is a bit of a kick in the pants. And I mean, Demon players had to deal with the exact same thing, right? And probably more so than the Lizardmen. But really, you know, I think Lizardmen, it was a really solid rebalancing. I do like the changes to the Slan, because I still feel like the Slan is a solid, powerful, high-end utility type caster. I mean, being able to adjust your miscast, being able to do the bonus channel, being able to
swap spells,
being able to reroll your first failed dispel. And then having the high magic lore.
Yeah.
They're great. And that lore attribute was awesome. I mean, attribute was just killing it.
I was like, wow, because you can go to any of the 8 normal lore. If you take high magic, you can go to any of the 8 little lores, and you can take the signature spell. So basically,
I almost hucked 6 dice at Fiery Convocation turn 1. Yeah. I was just like, you know, I could do this one spell and just try to nuke that entire unit of trolls. I don't know. Maybe I won't do that on the first turn. Maybe I'll just be a little bit more conservative.
But it's just having that, and
I was still getting 3 to 4 spells off a turn.
Yeah, easy. But, and then I was also looking at the fact they have that one upgrade that makes them Lore Master.
Yeah.
For like the Lore Master of Hoeth or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
The 8 signature spells.
So they can take
spells.
The 8 signature spells. If you have that in the Lizardmen army, that is definitely devastating as well, because you have all those magic missiles.
Yeah.
You have all those buffs. Because you can take Wisson's Wild Form, you can take...
Well, I mean, Nathan and I were talking about this throughout the week, and it is a bit of a sucker's bet to go the way of the Lore Master signatures.
But you're level 4 at that point, so
well,
you're level 2.
I know you're level 4, which is great, but the problem about it is anything... Okay, so say you're playing against Chaos like I played, right? Am I going to go take Lore of Life's signature spell? Am I going to go take Lore of Light's signature spell?
Well, Lore of Life is not bad.
Am I going to go take Lore of Death? Am I going to... Well, okay, right? But am I going to look at all these things and go, well, I want these? It's like, no, I'm going to want 2.
Yes.
So what did I do? I cast my spells. I rolled up. If I got better than 6,
and you can pick the 2
up.
You want, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, and that's why you looked at 2, right?
And that's kind of why I look at it going like, but you know, with high magic stuff, drain magic, you still have Soul Quench, which is as good as any magic missile you're going to get from the signatures.
Oh, yes.
Right? So, I mean, it's like, it's very hard to rationalize that Lore Master signature.
Okay.
Almost
I definitely can see
exclusively how because of the fact that you can still get those spells after one turn of magic, and you still have an amazing magic lore sitting behind you. Magic missiles aren't an issue. You've got the Arcane on Forging. I mean, I almost knocked off your channeling magic item in the first turn, you know, because I was just like, I don't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, and that thing was pumping out dice for you all game, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, it was like, that could have been a huge game changer. It's like, yeah, you know what? That's why you stick with that stuff, because it really does work for you. All right, so, yeah, I think that's where we end up with Lizardmen. Let's think about this. What do we want to ask for the weekly listener poll for this week? I think it's got to be about Space Marines.
Yeah, I think
you know
so
what
too.
I mean?
We didn't touch on all the new models that are coming
out. No, we didn't touch on all the new models that are coming out. I don't want to ask like what people's favorite release is, because I think with Space Marines, everything's kind of middle of the road. You're either a Space Marine player or you're not.
And it comes up as chapter specific. That's the big third too, right? Because you're like, oh, well, I really like fast attacks
because
I'm playing this kind of army. Or, you know, that's so...
Well, I think the question then needs to be, do you think that Robin Crudace is going to bring back the old style Space Marine codex that allowed you to customize your own chapter with special rules? Or do you feel like we're going to see vanilla Marines and then just here's 35 pages of units to choose from and then that's it?
Yeah. Okay.
And I will word that in a much more concise way, as I typically tend to do when I post these things.
I will definitely be commenting on that for sure.
You know, I just think that, I think it's something worth talking about. I mean, I can always just say, like, do you think Kreis is going to ruin the fucking book? And it's like, I don't know if he's going to do it. He hasn't ruined a book in a long time.
But as they said, the rumor mills and everything else, they said whatever character there is in the Space Marine book now, they'll have a supplement.
Well, that's what we know. We're going to see supplements for this stuff, right?
So like, have a supplement. So they won't, like, the book itself will be generic, and then they'll have a supplement for every other chapter.
That's okay. Well, you know what? Then that kind of invalidates that whole question. All right. So,
like, because I'm like, I already have pre-ordered white scars.
I'm ready to go. Yeah. Okay. So, in that case, why don't you ask a question, smart pants?
Okay. My biggest question is, do you think that they're going to rethink the book and have the Landspeeder Storm back as a dedicated transport for scouts instead of having it as a fast attack choice?
Well, that's oddly specific. All right, so do you think that the Landspeeder Storm will go back to being a dedicated transport for scouts? All right, let's do it. I don't have a better question right now.
I'm frustrated with this rule.
I think it was kind of a goofy thing to get rid of just because it was like, oh, but it was so great for scouts. Everybody loved it for scouts.
Yes.
Oh, well, whatever. All right, so, hey, something shiny. I don't own a PlayStation 3.
All right.
But everyone's been kind of talking about The Last of Us. Have you played it?
I have it.
Have you finished it?
I have not finished it.
Okay.
But I've played a lot of it.
Okay, so we'll try to avoid spoilers on this as we slowly wink and nod at each other. I am basically at fall.
Okay.
So fall, like, it starts with summer and then it goes to fall and they're in the mountains.
It does.
So I got past the two people that joined their party for that short period of time.
Yes.
He's talking to... Anyways, so, you know, I'm basically just watching it on YouTube.
Okay.
And watching some guy play through it. He's terrible at it. I mean, it's so frustrating to watch him play because he's so bad at the game. Everything takes forever.
Yes.
From a gameplay standpoint, even from just watching it, I am frustrated with all the time you spend shuffling through buildings. Like, it's so over the top to the point where I'm just like, oh my god, and I just start skipping ahead like 20 minutes worth of them like shuffling through buildings. Like, I think the set design is amazing. The environments are so good and they're so well thought out and they're so vivid.
Yes.
And then there's like 8 pairs of scissors on a desk and like a gun in the drawer and it's in like a Kmart.
You're just true. Like, okay, yeah.
Okay, why is there a gun in this drawer? This is a strange place for a gun.
Yes.
You know, but like, there's definitely weird little like gamer-esque things that bug me about it. But honestly, okay, I'm impressed by the dialogue. I think the story's pretty obvious.
Yes.
But it's executed very well. Yeah. And so, like, you do get relatively invested.
Yes. Well, me and another personnel from John Kingsway, we had this hard discussion that we would no longer play it at night because we couldn't go to sleep until the sun came up. After we got it the second day it came out.
Yes.
And we're playing it so hardcore that we're like, I'm not going to bed. We're like, no, you're not going to bed.
Well, it is a very, very engaging game.
Yeah, it's very vivid. It's very like...
It's hard to put it down. It's hard to stop watching it, even if you're not playing. Like, it's hard to stop watching it because, you know, somebody was saying like, oh, you should just go watch all the cinematics. And I was like, no, but I'm going to miss all the dialogue that happens when they're like walking through buildings and shit. And I'm like, I don't want to miss that.
No, it was
It sounds like that would be the best part. So, no, yes. I'm definitely enjoying it. I absolutely love the 20 years later. I think the 20 years later aspect of the whole zombie fungus thing is actually kind of the most engaging part of it.
Yes.
Is the fact that everything is so overgrown and kind of broken down. And I mean, obviously that's the theme, right? But it's... Mm-hmm. We're so used to seeing like a week after the zombies hit, or something immediate, and everything's fine.
Yes, you haven't seen it like what's the long term,
right? You know, the closest we got to that was I Am Legend, right?
Yes.
And I Am Legend is very similar type of view that you get, mm-hmm. but really the set pieces that they used in I Am Legend were so like you got them in like 8 or 9 shots, and then they just didn't go back to them because it was too hard to make everything look overgrown and like falling apart. And it had only been like, what, it was a year later, 2 years later or something like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like 20 to the point where this is the only medium where you would really, really be able to see that on like a really good scale. And yeah, I like it. I think it's quite good.
I really enjoyed the game. I still have, you know, I still gotta go back and finish it. I just gotta have time during the daylight.
When you're not doing hundreds and hundreds of zombies?
Well, during the daylight when I can actually get some sleep. And
well, you know, like I said, I do enjoy the game. I think honestly, the dialogue is the thing that impresses me the most. There's a couple places where it's a bit wooden, but for the most part, I think it's really strong. And I mean, Naughty Dog does that all very well with GTA and
yes.
other things like that. There's a couple of people saying like, oh, it's going to be game of the year. It could. I think we'll see what the next GTA looks like. I think we'll see what a couple of other games have, like Battlefield 4 and other games have to offer.
It's going to be a tough flip.
But I think in terms of story.
Storyline, for sure.
I think it's working really, really well. And I'm looking forward to finishing it.
Yeah.
That's been Jada Gamercast for this week. My name is Lyne.
I'm Scott.
Have a good one.
Later.